The following is a question and answer session by His Holiness Sri Rompa Swami, recorded on 26 May 2008 in Gita Nagari, United States.
Okay, sometimes we try to tolerate, for some time successfully, but then burst out one day in retaliation for all that we tolerated thus far. What's the best antidote to avoid this accumulation of frustration due to tolerance? Well, frustration isn't due to tolerance. Frustration is due to anticipation or expectation of some reward or result from your tolerance. Or, say it differently, frustration is due to the mode of passion being unfulfilled. Kamesha Krodesha, anger or frustration, is due to Kama. Kama that's unfulfilled leads to frustration. So, the way to address this one is to approach the idea or the cultivation of tolerance in a different way. When you withdraw consciousness from duality, you should place consciousness instead in Spirit, or withdraw consciousness from asat and invest consciousness in sat. That's the solution. Tolerating something is a beginning stage. It's like, you know, at least tolerate. But then, so that's what you're tolerating is features of duality. Sometimes it's hot and sometimes it's cold. Sometimes there's pleasure, sometimes there's pain. Sometimes there's honor, sometimes there's dishonor. And that's duality. So I don't invest much importance in duality because it's duality. It's not substance. So let me invest consciousness in substance, in sat. Then it's not a matter of the gritting your teeth kind of tolerance. It's a matter of factual indifference. At least that's what should be cultivated. The other kind of tolerance, maybe coming down from that, if I don't have the presence or wherewithal to invest consciousness in such, like, you know, spiritual instructions, then if there's something that I find is a source of irritation for my sensibilities of duality, then at the appropriate time, in the appropriate circumstance, in the appropriate mood, I may choose to communicate to somebody, something. That, and when you communicate something to somebody, this is an important item, that you should take ownership of your feelings, rather than saying, for example, you do this, and that causes me to suffer. You know, like you're blaming the other person for your own sensibilities, but you should take ownership for your own sensibilities. Take responsibility for your thinking and your feeling and your willing and your whole psychological makeup. Anyway, the other kind of tolerance, just it just as it's described, It's like filling a balloon, and how much can you fill the balloon until the balloon pops? That's the wrong idea of what tolerance means. Don't place value in that which is temporary, is how to address this one. Here's an interesting one. Krishna is sending signals. Who's got that radar that can pick up Krishna's signals? Krishna is sending signals. How do we know or confirm whether the signals or circumstances arising are actually in our favor? I need some help with this one. Who wrote this one? Could you explain what you mean?
Yeah, so Krishna is sending signals, like for pure devotee, one is sincerely trying to practice Krishna consciousness. He creates circumstances so that we can become more pure towards his life.
Okay.
Yeah, but how do we accept the signals? Like, how can I confirm myself that whatever things happening around us is actually in his favor and not in our favor, not in the material's favor?
Well, you've got a blend of circumstances. First you started with a pure devotee, and then it went to yourself, and then it went to Krishna sending a signal, and then it went to how do I know it's favorable? Every signal, let's start with a fundamental thing. Let's start with the fundamental that we're mixed devotees. We're not on the platform of pure devotion. Because we're on the platform of mixed devotion, When Krishna sends a signal, we're going to read it not as it is. We're going to read it mixed because we got our filters up. So the signal is favorable. What comes through our filters is some distortion of Krishna's signal. We okay so far? So, the problem is not whether the signal is favorable. The problem is how many filters I got set up. Only letting things that I read as favorable in, because things I don't read as favorable, my filters are going to keep it out. So, the real problem is purity, or like you said, the problem is lack of purity. So let's take our circumstance, and then we'll take a pure devotee's circumstance. In our circumstance, I've got enough for now. It's good. In our circumstance, a little something, we're going along with life, and down the path comes something that looks like a problem. And we right away get into this, you know, is it favorable or unfavorable? Now, just, we're Prahlad Maharaj going down the path of life, and he gets Hiranyakashipu as a father. Oh my God. And he tells his friends to chant Hare Krishna, his father wants to kill him. Oh my God. And his father can't kill him. And gets angry. So, you know, that looks like really unfavorable. But Prahlad Maharaj doesn't see it that way. I'll go back to our life. We're moving down the path of life, and something comes that looks like a problem, an obstacle, you know, whatever it is. So now how do we address that? For we think of Prahlad Maharaj, and we think of Krishna, and we think this situation of life is intended to help me in some manner. Because I'm on the path of devotion to Krishna, so Krishna sent it. And that is favorable. It may mean more surrender. It may mean I have to learn patience. It may mean I have to be tolerant. It may mean I have to be strong. It may mean so many things. But whatever the appropriate behavior in response is, let me do it in Krishna consciousness. Then it's favorable. By the way, we had a whole one of these weekends here in Gita Nagari on this topic. On the topic of say yes to Krishna. And then the converse of that would be fault finding. They did this to me. It was favorable to this so-and-so got in the way. And then they started messing around. And look what they've done. Instead of saying yes to Krishna. One seminar was the art of fault finding. Krishna's name is non-different from Krishna. What is the significance of Nama Prabhu? Is he non-different from Krishna himself? Well, the significance of Nama Prabhu is Nama Prabhu is Krishna, and his answer to the second question is Nama Prabhu is not different than Krishna. And that's what our whole weekend has been about, because like this very nice question that Mataji asked the other day about Super Soul and tuning into Super Soul. The problem with turning into Super Soul is we're on the wrong frequency. And we've been banned from that frequency because of our negative attitude toward the broadcaster. Super Soul himself. Even when we try to tune into the frequency again, we don't have the access code. But Nama Prabhu is not like that. He's very, very merciful. If Krishna is all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-merciful, then why does he create a situation where we, spirit souls, why does he not create a situation where we, spirit souls, will be happy irrespective of our desires? This is the Harold Kirshner's question. I don't know what that means. He does. But we said no. The spiritual world is like that because the desires in the spiritual world are all in favor of Krishna, in love of Krishna. And this realm is also intended to help us come to that favorable position again. And so, like this question, it's all favorable. Like when a loving parent is guiding a dependent, a child, and the child wants to do something that's harmful. And the parent will, loving parent will explain, it's not a good idea to do this harmful thing because it, in this way and that way, it's harmful. And the child may think, why are they depriving me? So, in this world where there's opportunities that seem to be deprived and circumstances that tell us the message of this obstacle coming down the path towards us may very well be the message is this is not a happy place. By design, it's not a happy place. So don't stay here. But we want to stay here. Which that means we're not getting the favorable message. It's not good to stay here. So Krishna does create that, but, you know, we have our attitude toward Krishna problem. And so we don't get the real purpose of this place or the spiritual world. Okay, during the beginning stages of Krishna consciousness, devotees will tend to neglect the media training. How does it affect my progress in Krishna consciousness and how to overcome it? I don't know exactly what this means, but it seems like the question is has the answer built into the question. I have a problem because of X. What's the solution to the problem? Take care of X. And training in Krishna consciousness means that, first of all, the person is well-wisher. The person who's helping to train and guide you is a well-wisher. That's a fair assumption. And we need some well-wishings. That's another fair assumption. So we should accept the well-wishings of the well-wisher to get training in Krishna consciousness. So if one isn't doing that, then one should recognize, I need some well-wishes from a well-wisher, and accept it. And aside from that, on a higher platform even, is Krishna is pleased by such relationships and the dynamics of those kinds of exchanges. Krishna will be pleased. And when Krishna is pleased, then we can be happy. So, two of these questions in a row are, you know, what do you do with the fact that we have an attitude towards Krishna? Change your attitude. There's a different than ones. Why Krishna has 16,108 wives, whereas Ram has one? We missed you. Were you out of town? Huh? You were here or out of town? Oh. Oh, nice to see you. Okay. So you can have a silent arati, is that all right? So we can carry on? Okay, thanks. Why Krishna has 16,108 wives, whereas Ram has one. And it was considered as one of Ram's best qualities. Whose question? Okay. Different Leela. What was Ram's Leela? The ideal king. Yes? And as the ideal king, Ekapatni Vrata. And what was Krishna's Leela? Krishna's Leela was showing the splendor of Braja. In the splendor of Braja, Prabhupada would say, why only 16,108? And this was in Dwarka, and so many gopis. But he's exchanging unlimitedly on the realm of all rasas. How Krishna showed his majesty was he satisfied all the wives. And he manifested 16,108 Krishnas with 16,108 palaces. And each of the queens, Prabhupada said it so many, again and again, so many times, each of the queens was thinking, Krishna loves me the most because he's always by my side. He has 16,107 other queens, but he's always with me. They were fully satisfied. So he's exhibiting another feature of his divinity and his supremacy. Okay. I want to know more about Gita Nagari, Dham, and His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. Is that, they're saying, in order of preference, that's question number one. Who wrote this one? Huh? Oh, I'm sorry. So, you want that one or the one below it is the order number one? Or?
I would like to know
about
this one. About? About Gita Nagari.
I like to talk about Gita Nagari, but it's appropriate. Here we are. I'll give a little history. There was a time as Prabhupada's movement was growing and growing and growing and exponentially growing, Prabhupada made a statement and repeated it several times in different places that he wanted to see the model of simple living, high thinking. So our books are filled with, but we were living in cities for purposes of preaching, which isn't simple living. It's complicated living in cities. Although it was fun living in cities preaching, the message that's in the books that we were distributing speaks about simple living, high thinking. But he wanted to have the large centers establish a rural property where cow protection and simple living, high thinking was exhibited to the world. Like the discussion this morning about an exemplary householder to teach the world by example. This is how you do it. So, to teach the world, this is the message of these books. Come and see. So, our GBC and temple president in New York got some money together, and somebody went looking for a property in New Jersey and upstate New York and all around town and couldn't find the right something, and they went upstate New York and ended up finding this really, really juicy, because of as far as farm quality, Gita Nagari is it's the area where the Amish and the Mennonites have settled because it's such rich agriculture. So he, with the permission of the GBC and president, purchased Gita Nagari as New York farm. And then Prabhupada came to visit it in 1976. And one of the Radha-Damodar buses came out with Prabhupada in the bus, and then he named it Gita Nagari. We didn't find out till later that Prabhupada had written this whole essay or a paper or a speech or something at the time of Mahatma Gandhi's funeral or memorial service, whatever. Prabhupada was a requested speaker at that event because he was a strong, at one time, follower of Mahatma Gandhi. So he spoke about Gita Nagari. He used the word Gita Nagari, you know, the village where the Gita is lived. It wasn't found till many years later. Many, many years later, after Prabhupada had named Giranagari, Giranagari. But Prabhupada had this vision. And then when he came here, he named it Giranagari. You know, we didn't know the connection at the time, but there's this many, 20 years prior document indicating what vision Prabhupada had for a place where simple living, high thinking, the ideals of Bhagavad Gita are lived. That was what he wanted this place to be. In 1997, when Prabhupada's health was finished, and there was all this thing going on in Vrindavan about whether Prabhupada would live or not, and whether Prabhupada was indicating whether Krishna wanted him to live or not. Anyway, so Tamal Krishna Maharaj, in a very inspired manner, said, Prabhupada, you are like Arjuna. Die in the battlefield, preaching Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, yes, I will go to the West. And he had three things that he wanted to do. Two of them, that I visit his disciples and encourage them. Speak the message of Varnashram Dharma. And visit Giranagari. There were three explicit things. It was like high end Prabhupada's. It wasn't, New Vrindavan had already existed, but he saw Giranagari as being that place where he wanted to come and stay here for some time. Health didn't permit him to come. He got as far as London and had to go back. And Paramananda was the president, and Yadu Nandana, who still lives here, the Taruni's husband. Did you meet him? Little white beard, goatee, older Vaishnava. She's the one that's in the back, said families, Iskhan being like a family, so that's Taruni, and her husband is Yadu Nandana, and he was present when Prabhupada was giving instructions about what he wanted Giranagari to become. He just shared that with me yesterday. So there was a team of devotees that, you know, they were ox power, self-sufficiency, no tractors, cows, the land, you know, all these little houses back here that nobody uses anymore because it was off the grid. No electricity, no flushing toilets, compost toilets, you know, with the model. You know, that was years ago. How many years ago? Now they have, I just saw this morning in New York Times, a little electronic thing, of in college, it's a buzz now of sustainability, you know, until how long they should stand in the shower. That green. How green is your college? So that stuff was stuff that Prabhupada was saying 30 years ago. And Giranagari was the place where he wanted that to happen. Or at least one of the places where he wanted that to happen. And he wanted to stay for some time and instruct and support and inspire and make it happen. So he didn't make it here. And Paramananda was the minister of agriculture for all of ISKCON. He used to come to our GBC meetings and show videos of how he was out in the field plowing the oxen. And the cows were in the Harrisburg, Pennsylvania State Farm, State Fair, and winning first, second, and third prize every year in the cow judging, whatever they do in state fairs. So it was drawing attention of the whole state, you know, what Giranagari was doing. It was prospering and in ways that Prabhupada wanted it to prosper. Then some unfortunate things happened, like devotees, Vegavati can tell you all about it. There was a plan of, we need some more money, let's go sell paintings. So they went away from just self-sufficiency into making a bunch of money to do things. And so then this robust economy based upon selling paintings happened, and then the painting sales flopped. And then the economy crashed for Gita Nagari, and all the householders who were dependent upon their economy had no economy because they left the land. So many people had to leave. Some went to Wisconsin, some went to Vermont, some went to this place, some went to that place. And Gita Nagari became deserted. I mean, compared to the robust position that it was in before. And I'm just missing a lot of things, but so then Teja Prakash came, and anyway, he did something for a while, and then, you know, wasn't going so well. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj requested Bhakti Tirtha Swami, your preaching is really growing in Washington, Baltimore area, and one of the messages that you're giving is this message. Gita Nagari needs somebody to make it happen. Same, you know, what Prabhupada wanted to be. You know, why don't you consider make it happen in Gita Nagari? Because he was doing at that time this indirect kind of preaching. He shared this with us this in the last days that he was personally shared it with me. I was in the room when because he wanted to. Because he knows that I do innovative, kind of off-the-grid stuff myself, so he was explaining how it was that he got here. I heard it directly from him. And at that time, the people that he was interacting with in Washington, D.C., many of them didn't even know that he was a devotee, because he had this Institute for Applied Spiritual Technology thing going on. So he came out of he didn't come out of the closet. He said, I've got this offer to take responsibility for a farm in mid-Pennsylvania. Let's go. And so a bunch of people, Akabir was nodding and said, he just quit his job. And others just, you know, pulled the plugs and came to Gita Nagari because they just loved Bhakti Tirtha Swami. And then it's a Hare Krishna temple. Oh, okay. And they started practicing Krishna consciousness more openly and tried to grow the vision that Prabhupada had given. Broke out this, it was called the Gita Nagari prophecy, and tried to develop the social structure and the infrastructure and the agriculture and the whole thing. And you can ask some of the local devotees here. Sada Char can share what that experience was like, and Jagannath Pandit can share that experience. And Gita Nagari came back up again from being, you know, finished. And as that was going on, Bhakti Tirtha Swami began traveling around the world doing Herculean tasks of preaching and inspiring and governments and leaders and, you know, unprecedented levels of preaching Krishna consciousness all around the world. And then he had booked another round-the-world ticket and went to go see a doctor because he had a pain, and the doctor told him, you got cancer. And so he started taking cancer treatments and canceled his round-the-world ticket, and the cancer wasn't responding, and then he left. the devotees after a very dramatic departure of inspiring devotees and showing how to give up the mortal coil. Every moment inspiring devotees. So then the community here has been without his leadership, but still having some of the vision that he gave, and here we are today. It's like a not so detailed, but some of the history of Devanagari. Okay. How does one come in contact with a pure devotee in order to share a confidential relationship? Question mark. What is our role in such a process? Well, the secret is that Krishna does everything. But don't tell anybody because it's a secret. Prabhupada's teaching was that when one is sincere, Krishna knows what our desires are, and when Krishna sees some sincerity, he sends. That's how it happens. It's a reciprocation from Krishna. That's how the contact comes. And then, you know, sharing a confidential relationship, that's in Bhagavad Gita 4:34 and Nectar of Instruction, the six types of loving exchanges. We inquire submissively, render some service, offer ourselves in submission, and then we try to bring into action, into our lives, that message that we hear. And that's the three main points that Krishna chooses to give as to the nature of a confidential relationship. So the confidential relationship is having this discussion with one devotee yesterday. And while things may start on that footing, and we may not even understand exactly, like Krishna describes it in the Bhagavad Gita, what's going on, it's the starting point is our sincerity. Like there's a whole chapter in Nectar Devotion called Eligibility of a Candidate for Devotional Service. Right? And Prabhupada asks the question, what makes one eligible for devotional service? And then he answers the question, sincerity or eagerness to have it, eagerness to have some understanding of God or a relationship with God. And so to facilitate that desire, he sends a representative to have a relationship with the representative. And then what do we do in that? What is our role in such a process? Pranipat, prashna, and seva, that's our role. It starts with our inquisitiveness. Atato brahma jigyasa, wanting to know. And then when we inquire, when Krishna sends someone who can help us, when we inquire, our business is to take that message within our heart and appreciate this is something that Krishna has just given. And you cherish it and value it and feel gratitude for Krishna's reciprocation, and then try to manifest it in your life. Right after I leave the holy dham of Gitanagari, I find the dark cloud of Maya covering my eyes. I try to remain in spiritual consciousness to the best of my ability, but inevitably material consciousness takes over. How do I remain in spiritual consciousness? Stay in Gita Dhatri. Sadhachar likes that one. Pretty well. And what that means, if you can't physically stay in Gita Dhatri, is you stay in the association of devotees. Now, there's a time for all things. There's a time for us to come together and take inspiration from one another's association and kirtans and deity worship and all of what we've just experienced. And then there's time for us to take that message into our hearts and carry that message and grow that message in the course of our interactions with others. There's a time for that, and that's what's coming up. If you do that, you just see that's it's the time for this, you manifest it. You've made some friendships with some devotees and continue having some communication with those devotees and share how this has impacted and how the next part is the implementation or application part. There's many practical things that have been heard. And if you apply them, I'm going to add one other ingredient to the recipe. If you apply them, you'll find that the sense of spiritual consciousness remains. But then the next thing is, well, I find that I'm not applying them. Why you're not applying them? One of the things that will help, in one sense practically guarantee that you will apply them, is if there's a sense of relationship unto the persons from whom you have heard that you're acting in that relationship. Just like I'll say it differently. How is it that those devotees or disciples of Srila Prabhupada are able to continue in their Krishna consciousness? Because we can't go to Prabhupada and, as we did, and sit at Prabhupada's feet and hear him describe what he wanted and then just go out and do it. We can't have that physical presence experience anymore. Although at one time we did. So what's sustaining our Krishna consciousness? And that's, you know, understand that one, then you can understand this one. There's a relationship. And because Prabhupada wanted something to happen, it's our life to make that something happen, to bring that within our life and make it happen. That's what struck me the other day when I was speaking about what Bhakti Tirtha Swami did. It was, his life was going like this, and all of a sudden he went like that. And it was just because of one thing, you know, Prabhupada. What he was doing was also Prabhupada, but how to connect what he was doing with something that Prabhupada directly did. He just took, you know, right angle turn, and here he ended up in Gita Nagari. Because of his love for Prabhupada. And that's how spiritual consciousness can be sustained. When there's love for the person from whom you're taking inspiration, and you bring those things that you've heard from that person who you love and is your inspiration in Krishna consciousness into the world of action. You just stay within that relationship and you'll feel spiritual consciousness. And the cloud of Maya is dispelled by the light of that loving relationship. You can transform the dark cloud into light through Krishna consciousness. And that Krishna consciousness stays. So, yeah, I could expand on that, but that addresses. Shishirata Dhammadarshi? Right. The second half of the question is question two, how do I find my spiritual master? Krishna will send your spiritual master. The eagerness is to take shelter of Krishna, and Krishna sends persons that represent him, and when that connection with Krishna is felt, it's not a matter of selecting, it's a matter of accepting Krishna's arrangement. It's not a menu, it's, you know, it's Krishna's arrangement. Sometimes something I like to do a lot, just because it's a loving exchange, is to distribute prasadam. Going from one place to another place, take prasadam from that local deity and distribute the prasadam of this deity or that deity. So something that I've, over a period of time, I've seen that one of the things that children, I learn a lot from children, some children will just stand there and look at you. Some just don't even look at you, they look at what's in the... And then if there's a variety, you know, I've learned now, at least certain children, I need to ask them, which one do you want? Because if I don't give them the one that they want, they go like that. They'll point to the one they want or just take it. That's not loving reciprocation exactly from the child's side, but that's, it is an indicator of their consciousness. And we should not be like that. Krishna makes arrangements. Of course, certainly there's some matter of the heart and some power of discrimination going on, but it's a little bit, you know, it's the flip side of this question about when obstacles come, how do we know if it's favorable or not? Sent by Krishna. The obstacle sent by Krishna. And the representatives, you can say plural. They're sent by, how do I process? There's so many wonderful representatives that Krishna is sending my way, and I want to have a nice relationship with so many persons. And that's not a no-no. It's a yes-yes. It's favorable for Krishna consciousness. If we see someone not following the Krishna conscious principles properly, it is very easy to look down upon them or not respect them. How to avoid this behavior? Are we, the person who's asking this question, is this a devotee who is not following the Krishna conscious principles? A devotee. Okay, so We're in this community somewhere, and there's somebody in that community somewhere that's like in the devotee community, but they're not following the principles. So now, it's easy to look down upon them and not respect them. How do we avoid this behavior? I learned something from this weekend. It was something that I learned. It just reinforced by the grace of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. If we're doing like that, that's our contamination. And how do we address our contamination is to chant more purely, or call upon. So the antidote for this problem is striving to chant the pure holy name. Because when the pure holy name is, and even you're striving for that, this outburst, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's language, of compassion is experienced. It's not, you know, an adjustment over here. It's something that's happening here. Because so here's this devotee that's, how uncomfortable must that devotee feel? That there's all these people that are practicing in a way that I'm not practicing. I'm like a black sheep. I'm this crow in a flock of swans. They must feel really bad. So what struggles must they be undergoing? Subjectively, emotionally. I'll say, same answer, little differently. And the other answer is, we need quality association to keep us from that low behavior, ourselves, of condemning somebody or looking down upon somebody. So this came from one of the teenagers. A teenager was writing to me saying, there's this other teenager. And it's a girl. And she's just like completely into boys. And, you know, I think that's yucky, you know, because how many times have you heard it? And, you know, I see what it's like when those, you know, the non-devotee kids go boy-girl things. And here, this is a devotee girl, and she's going after the boy-girl things. And so my thought is, I just want to stay away from her. But then I was thinking, supposing that was me, you know, by some weakness, I started going off in that yucky direction. Would I want people just to like abandon me and leave me alone and look down upon me? I said, no. Then I thought, yeah, but I don't want to get really close to them because they've got this yucky thing going on. So what should I do? They're sharing this in a letter. And I thought, what's some Krishna conscious thing that we can do together that I know she really likes? I know what she really likes. It's just all like a monologue in a letter. She really likes something, like reading Krishna book stories together, whatever, I can't remember what it was. Or singing, you know, let's learn to sing our bhajans together. So I decided, let's make a thing, we'll get together and do that together. Because then there's like this nice thing between us, and I'm sure that would help her, would make her feel happier to be with devotees rather than that yucky stuff. Then she can have that experience instead of the other experience, and then she can choose. It's on, you know, it's her choice. Is that okay, Maharaj? And, you know, not only okay, Hari Bol. And then, you know, the inspiration from that was seeing how some elder girls try to do that with one another, and sometimes even with her when she gets off track. You know, they don't just like leave her alone. So by the good example, she went through that whole process. Now, still being cautious so she doesn't get sucked into that other negative energy, but, you know, a loving gesture. So, good chanting, good examples, trying to act on the platform of loving relationships with such people, with all people. Because when there is such of a relationship, and from our side, we do speak something about that little struggle over there, that, you know, not following the principles struggle, whatever's going on. It's not taken from nor is it given from a condescending position. I'm up here, you're down there. What's wrong with you? Get up here, will you? But it's, you know, there's affection. And so that person, their heart will be open to hear and receive. So it's like this triangle. When we're dealing in a relationship with those persons, you identified what not to do. There's some other not to do's. We know when we extend ourselves, we should be careful that we don't come to that position ourselves. We remain internally fixed and pure, while externally not judging. And another is that we don't own the other person's problem, because that's a psychological mistake, and we just carry around the other person's problem. And then we become, you know, a receptacle of so many people's problems, and it gets it's a heavy load. But there is this thing of allowing people to understand that we can relate. We're not holding ourselves some high, but we're able to relate on a, you know, a human personal level. And then when we extend a hand, they're ready to receive and put their hand in our hand so we can move some steps with them. Then back to the other part of the triangle, not descending, not becoming infected by that same problem or other such problems, nor owning the other person's problem, but relating. And so, and that's in a general way with preaching, but it's also with devotees. You know, that we sometimes are compassionate to the non-devotees, but not compassionate to the devotees. Which doesn't make sense. Because we have an expectation of the devotees. They should be up here. But it takes compassion to bring them to that position sometimes. You know, so then you have to evaluate, does the person even want to move? In some cases, they don't want to move. In fact, they'll explicitly tell you. Sometimes that's a test of your condition of being accepting. It's not really what they want. It's a defiance test. Do you really care about me, or you just want to change my behaviors, and then it's just a cosmetic kind of thing? We call it a relationship. Children do that all the time. And big children do that too. Did that one already? If desiring or wanting it is desiring or wanting attention, different from desiring respect, well, neither of them are desirable. But offering respect and offering appreciation and attention to others is always wanted. So I'm going to go on to it because it's three questions. It seems like there's a very fine line between admiring someone and wanting to emulate them versus becoming envious of someone. How do we distinguish between the two, and how do we not let admiration turn into envy, or admiration and respect? turn into envy. So admiration and emulation. If it's admiration and emulation, then it, for within the heart of a non-envious person, it leads to inspiration. I want to become something like that. It's the principle of association. Prabhupada's example is taking it, an object and bring it near fire and it becomes warm by proximity with the fire. So similarly, here is a devotee that has this admirable quality. So let me associate, let me come close to that devotee in association with that devotee so I can, by their association, develop that quality also. And emulate. Like we were sharing some very, very wonderful examples of humility. So emulate, we can't imitate, but emulate the humility of our great acharyas, for example. But the position of envy is that person should come down so that either I'm above them or equal to them. So that's envy. It's like, let's say, I was thinking about this in our questions and answer session, thinking that something like this might come up, like, wow, we heard all these really lofty things, but we're way down here. But it's good to hear lofty, it's good to hear what is pure devotional service. Because let us be really clear what our standard is. It's pure devotional service. And we're not at pure devotional service. But so envy is, I don't like that standard. And emulation is, I like that standard. Although I'm not there, I'm inspired by that standard. Let me strive. So that's the distinction between envy and appreciation and emulation. How do we not let admiration turn into envy? Is serve those great souls. Like, you know, Prabhupada gave in his teachings this tsunami of pure devotional service message. Take it in and be carried by it rather than some other behavior. Why did Prabhupada say this, and why did Prabhupada do that, or something like that, or Prabhupada's followers, and then so I don't want to take part in this program. The message of pure devotional service can carry us to Krishna's lotus feet. Another question. Sangha is so much stressed for Vaishnavas. Is loneliness an obstacle for becoming humble? Very curious question. Who? This looks like a lady's handwriting. Great. Like a typewriter. Very, very delicate. Anyone want to own up to this one? Ah. You have beautiful handwriting. Nice questions, too. Here's something I just came across in Shikshamrita, where Prabhupada speaks about solitude. 1968, letter to somebody, I forget who. In short, Prabhupada was discouraging solitude, especially in the beginning stages of Krishna consciousness, because through association we can get strength. Now, having times, again, I was going back to something I said earlier, there's time for everything. There's time to be in a quiet space. But to be unable to be with others and be in that space of loneliness when there's abundance of nice association. Solitude has its place, loneliness doesn't so much have its place, because on the spiritual platform at least, we have spiritual association, we're not alone. Through instruction, through Vani, we can have association of Prabhupada and great personalities before him and after him. So we just extend ourselves, reach out, and that association is there, and then we're not lonely. More on this? Want to expand on the question? Or the dialogue on this a little bit? Or you're okay? Okay. When trying to consciously cultivate the quality of humility, sometimes the expression of humility comes out artificial. Although I have good intentions. So how important are those expressions? Because sometimes devotees tend to misunderstand us. Well, to be misunderstood is more common than to be understood. And how someone can read intentions is more like, you know, at least a reasonable person will look to the consistency over a period of time rather than a particular moment. Right? So that's what's important, is that we're consistent over a period of time in striving in a sincere manner in what we do, whether it's striving for humility or whatever it is. Be consistent. Try to be consistent in your moods of, in your position of sincere efforts, position of sincerity. So then you need not worry about whether others are reading you properly or not. Assume there's going to be some of both, proper, improper. That's not the measure of your advancement in Krishna consciousness. Your measure of Krishna consciousness is how sincerely you apply yourself. And it's, now sometimes it comes out as a little artificial. But practice is required. You exercise your humility muscle a little bit. And initially it's, oh, my arm is tired. Okay. Give it a little rest and then a little more. And it just, so, it may, like Bhaiti Sadhana Bhakti, when it's done properly under the instructions of scripture through the directions of the spiritual master, it transforms into spontaneous. Because it touches the heart. So you're practicing something, don't worry about your practicing something comes off a little awkward. learn to play some musical instrument, then initially it's awkward. Or learn to drive a car, initially it's awkward. But after some time, zoom, 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 down the road you go. And you gotta remind yourself, I have to pay attention here. And so forth. By practice, it becomes natural. Because it is natural. Unlike driving a car or typing a typewriter or riding a bicycle. Those are abilities that are innate, but this is on the soul platform. Humility is of the soul. So we're out of practice, we practice. And at least between yourself and Krishna, the Krishna knows I'm sincerely trying to be humble. And if others can understand it or misread it, what can I do? Krishna knows. And be consistent with it. There's a question here about weakness of will. We heard many inspiring things, thank you, thank you, but... sometimes the will is weak. How can I overcome weakness? This weakness. So maybe give it something similar to the same answer. Keep exercising that muscle. Just keep trying sincerely. And count on Krishna's help. So through the association of many nice devotees, we've gotten nice inspiration, met some nice people, made some nice friends, wonderful kirtan, very inspiring deity worship, some really show-off peacocks here, strutting around. Check me out, get out your camera, here I come. Look at this one. Then they turn on side profile. So we received a lot, and then our capacity to manifest all of that in an ongoing manner is less than 100. So we do what we can and sincerely strive to take something, take an essence, or take a few things, take something and really focus, and with your peer support group or whatever you have going for you, those that help you move forward in Krishna consciousness, work with them to make that made stronger in your life. Application through the strength of devotee relationships, loving relationships. Okay. What time should we end? We're supposed to end at 1 o'clock. Is that on the schedule? I have been close to Devotee Association and Krishna Consciousness for the past 1.5 years. I am regularly chanting 8 rounds and following regular principles. After hearing lectures, I come to know that without accepting a spiritual master, one cannot make progress in Krishna Consciousness. Even though I sort of know these facts, I am not really confident to approach, quote, spiritual master. I feel that approaching spiritual master itself is very, very, very big step in my life. And even though my heart is saying, approach him, my mind at times says, you're not ready. You need to give more time, etc. You have to advance more before approaching. Can you please address how to resolve this duality in my mind? There's these two sides, both have some merit. To qualify oneself is appropriate, and to make steps is also appropriate, or with commitment, acting with commitment. There's this nice expression that is sometimes attributed to Goethe and sometimes to some other sources, but in that moment of hesitation, then it looks like it's one's own capacity that's carrying the day or is carrying the moment. And with that hesitation, then it's, you know, the difficulty looks ominous. But then when there's commitment, then the statement is that the act of providence takes charge. Well, Prabhupada's expression is, you take one step towards Krishna, he takes sometimes 10, sometimes 100 steps towards you. That's the commitment factor. So commitments can also be incremental rather than hesitating. There's different things that can be done in that circumstance. One thing that can be done is you privately in your prayer to Krishna or a little journal that you keep, you make this private commitment and you cultivate in a private manner that commitment, deepen that commitment. Because it's not just like all of a sudden, you know, that my qualities reach a certain threshold and a bell starts to ring and a light starts to flash and it says, now you're eligible. And before that, you know, the bell doesn't ring. Not like that. But so in internal cultivation, because that's what a relationship is anyways, it's not just behaviors, it's a commitment to a person. Whether it's a friend or someone you come to know or a husband and wife, so on. It's a commitment to a relationship. And as you make commitments in a relationship, then the ease of the dynamic of that relationship, everything starts to flow. Another consideration is that it's not, you know, there's a big clock in the sky ticking somewhere that says at a certain point in time, if you haven't done this, then you flunk or something. There's not a race against the clock. Beat the clock. Not one of those things. So patiently, carefully, deliberately, thoughtfully cultivating proper relationship, there's merit in that. Then on the other side, make incremental steps. Another thought is, in this space that's being described in this little note, cultivate very deeply your relationship with Prabhupada through his writings, through reading the Lilamrita, through your prayers, make your offerings with sincere heart and feel that connection. And of course, what's being said here is that there's this sense already from doing that with Prabhupada's teachings that he's saying, bona fide spiritual master, make that submit. So that's also there. So then as the relationship with Prabhupada and his teachings becomes stronger, then it just strengthens that conviction, and the threshold is whatever that resistance is. From what's written, it sounds like the resistance is the mind and not the heart. So we need to learn to follow our heart and little less follow the mind. The mind's been leading us all over kingdom come. And it's not a good master. Okay. It's 1 o'clock, and the last question is, please give us some dust that we can carry from Gitanagari Dham. I happen to have a Gitanagari jar of dust over here. No, I don't. But the darshan that we've had of Radha Damodar and the association of the devotees, that's the those dust particles of their merciful association, I'm sure we'll carry with us as we go back to our places. You just wash your car and keep a whole pile of dust from washing your car. That's some Gitanagari dust. There's a plan. There's a plan to come back again. In previous years, I can't remember when it started, of coming here on an annual basis, something in the late 80s or around 1990, something like that. For having week-long institute, whatever it was, Gitanagari Institute retreats. But this year we're going to have a second one. It's going to be specifically just focused on enhancing japa, a japa enhancement 5-day thing at Labor Day weekend. So if you appreciate Gitanagari so much, and it's growing, a growing appreciation, come back again. Or if you're not able to come, but you appreciate, you can invite others to come. And hopefully we'll have a little bit more together in the accommodation department, and your stay will be more comfortable next time. And if you can't come then, invite others, and we'll see you again in Memorial Weekend next year. Shishi Radha Damodar Ki Jai. Shishi Gitari Dham Gitanagari Dham Ki Jai. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gopi Manandi Ki Jai.